Welcome, everyone, to another Baseball America College podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with a 2014 attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. Aaron has gone, I don't know about stronger and lighter, but you're definitely farther than usual out in the middle of the America's Midwest, America's heartland in Oklahoma, the land that America initially did not want. So, Aaron, you are in Norman. Are you staying in Norman tonight?
Yes, I am in Norman, and I've gotten some. I got a restaurant tip from former Oklahoma pitcher Jordan John on Twitter yesterday, so I'm gonna have to check that out.
Nice.
It's been very. It was very breezy here yesterday, which I guess is one of the things Oklahoma is known for. It's a windy place, but got a good look at Kansas State with a redshirt freshman named Nate Greep, who went in there and shut down. A very potent Oklahoma offense that had been swinging the bats very well, scored 22 runs over the previous two games. And, you know, Greep wasn't doing anything fancy. He was just spotting his fastball. It was 86-88 and hitting the corners. And, you know, a bunch of fly ball outs and only three hits and went the distance in a shutout. So, really gave Kansas State what it needed to salvage that Sunday game.
That was just what they needed. I'll give you a Cars reference. Just what I needed. So, nice. Aaron. Why don't we just jump in? A lot of movement in the rankings this week. Since you've seen a couple of Big 12 games, we'll actually just jump in a little bit on the Big 12 standings. I'm throwing you a curveball. As always, you can send us questions to these podcasts for this podcast, or of course for future ones. More importantly, for future ones, to podcast@baseballamerica.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. He's at Aaron Fitt. I am at John Manuel BA. And I do have a question about the Maryland NC State series that we'll discuss later on. But the Big 12, Aaron, this is a league that has no teams ranked in the top 10. We have Texas at number 12. Are they the only Big 12 team in the top 25? I believe they are, correct?
Wow. Yeah, I think you're right.
And this is a league that is, I mean, so you've seen a lot of Big 12 lately. You saw West Virginia and Chapel Hill. You've seen TCU. You saw Oklahoma and Kansas State. I guess West Virginia is the only team that's undefeated in league play because it hasn't played anyone yet. And no one's under 500 in this league, but there's certainly, I guess Oklahoma has the gaudiest record. What do you make of the early Big 12? I mean, who is the favorite here? Is Texas the prohibitive favorite, even though they haven't won a conference series since 2012?
I wouldn't call anyone a prohibitive favorite in this league. I think it's wide, wide open. And I was talking with one of the coaches this weekend, and I think it was Jim Schlossnagel, and he said, you know, this is a league where I honestly believe any team in this league could finish first or last. And, you know, I mean, I think he's onto something there. The teams that coming into the season we weren't so sure about, you know, Kansas, Texas Tech, those teams have gotten off to good starts. Kansas State and TCU, two of the teams we really liked heading into the season, they've scuffled a little bit. Baylor was kind of that middle-of-the-pack team heading into the season. They've played really well. Three straight real quality series wins against Cal State Fullerton, Texas Tech, and then Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is struggling. That's a team a lot of people really liked. We weren't quite as sold on. But they've lost a couple of series now to San Diego and Baylor, and they really don't have any quality wins on their resume. So, all these teams have some talent. This could be a five-bid league, but who knows what the five teams are.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I mean, and Baylor's resume just sums it all up. I mean, this is just a – they've been all over the place, Aaron. Lost a series at Arizona State to start the year. They had a poor performance out in California. I mean, kudos to them for going out to California. Of course, the one weekend they choose to go to California is the weekend that it rained in California. But they lost to Cal twice, USD, UNCW. And then they go and, like you said, they win three straight weekends. That's probably the best stretch that any team in the Big 12 has, right? I mean, winning those three series, granted they were all at home, but that's a pretty fascinating series with them and West Virginia coming up to open league play on the road, and then of course they have to go to Texas. I mean, it just seems like Baylor just – none of these teams, like you said, are just easy reads. There's no easy read here. What made Texas the number 12-ranked team? It feels like it's a combination of just the expected pitching. They have seemed like they've pitched up to expectations. And they've played a fairly tough schedule, and outside of the the one hiccup, they, you know, the against Kansas, they have played well in the non-conference.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's can you repeat the question, John? I got distracted. I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Is there a cat there or something like that? Do you have a pet there with you or no?
No, no pets.
The quick version of the question is, what makes Texas the favorite? Why is they have the strongest resume? They have the strongest talent base coming in. They were the highest ranked team in the preseason, but they have played well in the non-conference. And do you still feel that they are the best team in the league?
I think so. Because I think they have, first of all, the best pitching. Although TCU, I still think is going to be right there with them. But I think Texas has the best pitching and has been a better offensive team than TCU has been. I mean, TCU continues to be very inconsistent. Texas has pitched very well and they've scored more runs. They've been a lot more opportunistic on offense than they were last year. And we ran them back up a few spots in the rankings this week, not because they swept Columbia, but because somebody had to move up. And, Texas has a pretty decent body of work now. They're 19-6. They had that great weekend at the Minute Maid Classic where they beat three quality teams out there in Rice, Houston, Sam Houston State. Their best series win, I suppose, is Stanford, who's not great. But they also went on the road to Cal and split four games. So, I think they've played a solid schedule. Even Hawaii, they've played – brand name teams for the most part, and there's not a huge difference in their style of play. I think they're just getting more timely hits, and they're executing better on offense, and than they have the last 2 years.
Yeah, and they've found a home for John Curtis at the back of the bullpen. The Curtis and Thornhill kind of two names, guys who were supposed to be guys. Obviously, Curtis had Tommy John surgery. Has Thornhill had surgery as well, or no?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think he's been healthy, but they've kind of got a. You can look at him, and we talk every year about you're looking for six pitchers, especially for the postseason. Well, Curtis, Thornhill, French, Peters, Schiraldi, and I guess you throw Travis Duke in there. They have six pitchers here, and guys who are throwing a lot of strikes, and Thornhill's kind of a effectively wild. French seems like he gives them kind of a potential ace. And then, they do have a senior back in Mark Payton. He's not a big physical senior, but he is a good college hitter. He's been been impossible to get out so far this year. They're strongest shortstop defensively within Hinojosa. It does seem like the building blocks are there for them to be a good team, but certainly not a dominant team. And like you said, it doesn't seem like you don't expect any team in that league to run away from the pack.
Exactly right. I think it's really going to be a dogfight, and I don't know again who the best teams are at this point. I mean, I think you can throw them in a hat and shake them up, and we'll see what comes out.
Well, Aaron, I think we feel the same way, kind of in the top of our rankings: Florida State, South Carolina, and UVA is how we have 1, 2, 3 this week. We had South Carolina at the top of the rankings coming into the week. They lost their first series of the year against at Kentucky. First time they left the Palmetto State. Florida State lost a tough series, wins a tough series at Clemson as they go into the Palmetto State. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of separation between Florida State, South Carolina, and Virginia either. You could make a case for, especially Florida State or South Carolina, either of those teams' resume at number one. And Virginia's resume certainly is nothing to sneeze at either.
Yeah, and out of those three teams, South Carolina now is the only one that has lost a weekend series.
Right.
But they still only have three losses on the year, and they've got quality series wins against Clemson and Ole Miss, and that to me trumps anything really that's on Virginia's resume. The Cavs haven't played as robust a schedule. I mean, even their conference series start of the year were at Duke, which we think Duke is okay, and Boston College they swept at home, and then they split the first two games at Miami this weekend. So if they win that series, then they've finally got something there. And even Miami has been a weird team this year. They have not gotten off to as good a start as we thought they would, but that would be a good quality series win, certainly, if they go down there and take two out of three.
Yeah, and it's really the strange one, I guess, to me. The biggest surprise, I guess, in any of this, Aaron. I mean, again, people are allowed to be humans. I'm not trying to dog on them, but well, Jordan Montgomery, back to back weeks for South Carolina, has been hit hard. And again, he's human. Have you heard anything, or have you seen anything? If you seen him on TV, I know you saw him in person. Any reason to be concerned there? Is it just Jordan Montgomery having being human? We're talking about the South Carolina ace Friday starter, for those who don't know.
No, I think Montgomery is going to be fine. And, you know, I do think it's curious that in the three games he started against, you know, real quality opponents, he struggled in all three of them. He wasn't great against Clemson either. You know, when the Tigers built that 5-0 lead that they later blew. You know, I mean, it's I think it's just one of those things. I mean, from the reports I hear, there's nothing wrong with him. His stuff's fine. I think it's just a funk. You know, I'm not worried about him. I think he's right. Got track record, and you know, he's good. He just is in a little bit of a slump right now.
And it's not like he got hammered by, you know, in the first week against Ole Miss. He went into the sixth inning. He did get pretty hammered by, you know, by Kentucky. I'm very curious. You know, Kentucky's just their offense just stands out so much in this. In this era, Aaron, I've already belabored that point. People are tired of hearing about it. We brought the Wildcats back in. I mean, but it's not just AJ Reed, right? I mean, he's got supporting cast around him, but at the same time, AJ Reed's got 9 home runs. I mean, for crying out loud, did he sneak in the old bats?
Yeah, I mean, that's more than Oregon State has as a team. It's one fewer than Virginia has as a team, and 3 fewer than Florida State has as a team. So he's just a physical guy who's, you know, I mean, he feasted on some softer competition early too, but you know, he certainly has proven that he can hit quality pitching. And Michael Thomas has been the other guy that really has given them a huge lift. I mean, a veteran catcher that, again, brings out physicality, and he's off to a great start. He's hitting over 400. He's got 5 home runs of his own. You know, and then Cousineau has bounced back from his little sophomore slump. So those are kind of their star guys that they're building around, and I do think there's some depth in this lineup and some pieces that haven't even really gotten going yet that will, like Thomas Bernal and, you know, some of their freshmen, I think Shelby and Connor Heady. Those are guys they like, and you know, those guys have struggled a lot with the bats. So if those guys get going, maybe they could even have some more offensive upside.
It really feels like, I mean, it's early. Obviously, we're 6 weeks in, but I mean, College Player of the Year, your two top performers feel like Aaron Nola and AJ Reed. I mean, Reed, because Reed's also 4-1 on the mound. You know, he has like dominated on the mound. Yeah. But he's been, you know, he's a competitive weekend starter in the Southeastern Conference, and he has 9 home runs. You know, that's a pretty compelling case for AJ Reed. Let's just stay in the Southeastern Conference, if you don't mind, Aaron, and talk about the league. Obviously, they're in league play. Fascinating just to see. I mean, we've talked about it all year already, just the crazy parity in this league, how there's no separation here either. But we have 4 or 5 teams that are 3-3 in the SEC East. No one in the league is more than 4-2, and Auburn has been really the surprise of the year. So the Auburn Tigers give us our 12th different Southeastern Conference team that we've ranked this year. The Tigers come in the rankings at 21. And Sonny Galloway, you're maybe you could go rent Sonny's old place there in Norman. Leaves Oklahoma for Auburn. He's got the Tigers 17-8. 4-2 in the SEC so far, with a couple of weekend series wins at home against Texas A&M, and then on the road against what had been a very hot and confident Tennessee team, but a team that feels like Auburn and Tennessee, pretty similar talent-wise. It feels like those two clubs coming into the year. What's Auburn doing so well besides, I guess it starts with the freshman Keegan Thompson.
Yeah, certainly he's been he's been every bit as good as they thought he would be, and he is contributing two ways, but he's making much more of an impact on the mound. You know, I think he's 5-0 with an ERA less than 1 right now, and you know, he was a guy coming in that was just so polished because he's got all that Team USA experience. You know, I was talking about him with the Team USA guys yesterday, and they said, you know, we love this guy. He's been at the bottom of 2 dog piles for us. You know,
right.
I mean, he's never going to be intimidated by a big situation, and he's got good stuff. He's a 4-pitch guy. I think he's been working 90-93 for them, and you know, and he won that game, I think 7 strong innings against Tennessee on Saturday. And then Dylan Ortman on Friday has been kind of the guy who's come out of nowhere. I mean, a guy who's never really started before at Auburn. He was more of a bullpen guy. You know, and they decided coming out of the chute they were going to throw him on Fridays, and you know, it's nothing fancy about him. I mean, he's not funky, you know, he's not particularly deceptive. He doesn't have overpowering stuff. It's just three-pitch mix, you know, hit your spots. Those guys can be pretty successful in college baseball now. And you know, he's done a really good job for them setting the tone on Friday nights. And they've played good defense. They had to move some pieces around a little bit. They moved Dan Glevenyak from shortstop to second base, which has worked out pretty nicely for them. You know, I think he's settled in pretty well there. And they've got two good catchers they like that they mix up a little bit with Blake Austin back there, and then the freshman Blake Logan, you know, which I think will help them keep their catching fresh throughout the season. You know, they've got some depth. You know, Damon Hacker is the guy who's come in at shortstop, the freshman. You know, and Sonny Galloway was saying how shorthanded he's been, and that's really been a key for them defensively. So, I mean, they're a team that. I think on talent, I still think Tennessee has more raw talent. I think that Tennessee roster is pretty loaded. But Auburn has done a really good job staying in their approach and buying into what Sonny Galloway is teaching out there.
And it feels like they're just getting Sam Gilligan back from an injury. That's an athletic guy who they liked coming out of high school there in Alabama, was a big high-profile recruit. And just getting him back in the lineup, it does feel like they have some depth. I mean, and then they do have veterans in that lineup. Tomsha and Tella, Aaron, are guys who've been through it. You know, Tomsha won a national junior college title in Iowa, and it seems like he had some adjustments that he had to make last year to SEC play. But we'll see if he can keep it up. I think he got off to a good non-conference start last year. Tella's hit for 2 years in the league as another JC recruit, so it feels like the offense is. It feels like it's sustainable. I mean. Sonny seems like he has a pretty good track record of getting teams to hit. They're aggressive on the bases. They draw some walks. It doesn't, you know, especially if Ortman can keep it up, and he's had control issues in the past, and that really seems to be sticking out for him. That he's only walked 6 in 41 innings this year. It feels like that's if he and some of this other pitching they've, you know, coaxed along so far this year. If they can sustain that, it feels like the offense is sustainable for them, and they feel like they're for real. Is what I'm saying.
I think they, you know, they feel as for real as a lot of teams in the SEC, and that's the issue here is we just don't know how this thing's going to shake out. I mean, they're like you said, this is our 12th team now in this league that we've ranked. The only teams that I feel like aren't real regional contenders are Georgia and Missouri. Everybody else is going to be right in the mix, and they're going to beat the crap out of each other all year long. And all these teams are going to have ups and downs. Auburn is not going to go wire to wire here, winning every series. You know, they're going to have. Their struggles, and South Carolina had their first hiccup this weekend. They're number two team in the country. I mean, right. there's just incredible depth in this league, and you know, I just think there's not going to be a team do anything like what Vanderbilt did last year, where they won every series and what did they lose three conference games all year last year? I think they were 21-3.
Yeah,
I mean that's not going to happen.
Doesn't feel like that can happen. Vanderbilt, in fact, loses a series this weekend. Aaron, and to Mississippi State, it's like a pretty big deal for Mississippi State, which had been, you know, struggling in the pre-conference. But here are the Bulldogs. Do we have them ranked second highest out of the SEC teams, I believe, coming into the year after South Carolina, correct?
That's right, yeah.
I mean, I think we really had our questions about them, that series against Holy Cross. But as you wrote, John Cohen, you know, really kind of experimenting, mixing and matching, kind of trying to use the pre-conference almost as spring training. And, you know, like you said, Georgia is one of the teams that, you know, is not, we don't consider a regional contender, although they were hot going into that series with Mississippi State. But Mississippi State, never easy to win on the road, and they went to Georgia and won that series on the road, especially after losing on Friday. And now they win a series at home against a very talented Vanderbilt team. What did John Cohen find out in the pre-conference here that allowed – it's allowed Mississippi State to get off of this strong start in league play.
Well, I think the key has been it looks like he's got his rotation now. You know, they made the move a couple of weeks ago to put Ross Mitchell on Saturdays, and I think that has worked out very well. And now they've got this Preston Brown going on Fridays, and you know, kind of a less heralded guy, but it was striking to me. You know, Brandon Woodruff, the big power armed guy that they thought was going to be their Friday, their next Chris Stratton guy, and you know, he struggled. He couldn't handle the starting role for whatever reason, and he comes out of the bullpen in mop up duty in a 17-2 game on Friday. Whereas Preston Brown, this guy who wasn't really on the radar, gives him 8 strong innings. So you know,
wow.
sometimes sometimes it's just a matter of finding the right mix. And, you know, Mississippi State, I think they played 27 different lineups in 27 games, which to me, I'd like to see a little bit more consistency. I think there is such a thing as too much tinkering. I think, you know, let the guys get into a rhythm. I know you want to find out what you got and play a lot of different combinations, you know, and certainly it has worked for John Cohen, but I don't know. I think at some point you want to see this thing settle in here pretty soon.
I assume that you want to see your guys who you're giving big scholarship money to be your guys. I mean, Preston Brown threw 8 innings last year, and he's a redshirt sophomore. That's quite a story, Aaron, that this is now their Friday guy. That's crazy. And he's thriving so far in the role. He's given up 5 runs all year. But that is not a guy that you would probably ever expect to have seen in the questionnaire in the preseason that they would have expected him to be in a prominent role.
Right, exactly. And, you know, in our conversations in the preseason with their coaching staff, I mean, you know, I think they might have mentioned a dozen arms, and he wasn't one of them. So it just shows you. I mean, this is a guy that really has kind of came out of nowhere to be their number one starter right now. And we'll see how long that lasts. But so far, so good.
And I think it's also just notable, you know, it's just the college baseball atmosphere we're in. It's notable they have a couple of talented veterans in their lineup, Aaron, who, I mean, C.T. Bradford's always kind of injury prone. It's like he's missed some time, and DeMarcus Henderson's missed some time. But those two guys, Wes Ray, you know, he's the one rock, it feels like, who's been in their lineup, and he's not having a great year. But what power is in their lineup is provided by Wes Ray. And it seems like opposing teams, you know, pitching to him quite carefully. But this feels like a team, again, that the talent is there. You got to figure they're gonna settle on a lineup here somewhere soon, and they have. I do like their depth of their lineup. They do. I do like that they have options, and obviously the depth of their pitching staff. Has their bullpen missed Mitchell yet, or have they gotten more of a plus of having him on Saturday?
Well, you know, I mean, I think obviously it would be stronger if they had him, but I agree. I think having him go deep on Saturday, it does a lot of good for the rest of the bullpen, like you said. I mean, you know, it's just less innings you need to get out of your bullpen in that middle game. It helps keep everybody fresh. You need to use on Friday and bring him back on Sunday. You know, so I think that formula works when you've got a guy who can eat up innings on Saturday. It's really important. So, you know, they did give up. I think their bullpen gave up some runs on Sunday in that game that they were losing to Vanderbilt, but you know, Lindgren in particular, and Miles Gentry, those are two of their real key guys, veteran guys, and Ben Bracewell is the third guy who came in and kind of ended that thing for them. But those guys give up a couple of runs, but you know, I think there's really nothing to worry about. I still think their bullpen's going to be very good. I don't think it will be. I mean, I think I might have called it an 80 bullpen heading into the season, assuming Mitchell was going to be in there, and Lindgren, right, and Holder and Gentry and all those guys. It's not an 80 bullpen, and it won't be. But it should still be, you know, above average or better than that.
The only sweep, I believe, in league play, correct me if I'm wrong, has been Ole Miss sweeping Missouri this weekend, or am I missing a sweep in the other league?
Let me see. I think that's right. Yeah, wow.
So Ole Miss, I mean, and again, Ole Miss was not in the top 25 to start the year. You know, they swept the series at Stetson to start the year off. They swept the midweek against Southeastern Louisiana. They've swept the series against UCF. It was a pretty good non-conference series. Lost a heartbreaker last week at South Carolina in the middle game of that series, then wound up getting swept in the doubleheader. So they lost the series, but Ole Miss's resume certainly looks like they're the best resume in the league.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they've done a good job against a decent schedule, but there isn't really anything loud on their resume. You know, I mean, they're 21-4. That's the loudest thing they got going for them is their overall record. But right. I don't think they've got a series win against a regional team yet. I mean, the only regional team I think they've played is South Carolina, ultimately. So, you know, I'm not going to say that they've got the best resume in the league. I think it's, you know, I mean, I think it's South Carolina, obviously, or Vanderbilt. You know, right. Ole Miss has done a good job.
So Ole Miss, like you said, it's more the record. And I'm glad you corrected me, Aaron. You're that's why you're the beat guy, and I'm just the rapper over here. It's important to make that distinction. 21-4 is loud. You know, we dropped Vanderbilt to 7, only a spot or two, Aaron. You know, it's just the SEC. Just the competitiveness is just not something that's going to change all year, the depth of this league. And we'll keep on watching, obviously, as the, you know, it's only, we're 6 weeks in. Next week will be the halfway point of the regular season. But I think, you know, next week will be really our first stock report, correct? sometime midweek next week?
I would think so. Yeah, we'll have 7 weeks in. That's usually about when we start. We might start with a mid-season full projection, and then go to the weekly stock report thereafter.
I think it's going to be hard for you to get to 64 without 11 SEC teams.
Boy, I mean, at least 10, and I don't know who I'm going to leave out. I mean, you know, at this point, it's just too early to know who are the teams are going to get squeezed out of there, because, you know, I thought maybe it would be Arkansas or Texas A&M, because they had started to struggle a little bit. They both bounced back this weekend in one series against Alabama and Florida. You know, it's just so muddled. I have no idea how that league's going to shake out.
I don't either. It's fun to watch. I will say it is fun to watch. Now, speaking of less fun to watch so far has been the Atlantic Coast Conference, Aaron. I think that's fair to say, because so far the SEC is kind of playing according to type. As far as we had four teams bunched at 7, 8, 9, 10. We thought that league was going to be strong and deep, and there wasn't a great team. But South Carolina might be a great team. Vanderbilt might be a great team. But like we didn't think anyone would run away. And the ACC we thought was a top-heavy league. So far, Florida State, Virginia have held that up. But NC State is not holding up its end of the bargain. And it's just jarring, Aaron, to see a top 10 team get swept two weekends in a row. NC State drops all the way down to number 25, officially on notice. You know, you better have a 4-0 week or you probably could get out of the top 25 rankings. But more importantly, Aaron, they just I don't think that team has an identity yet. And they've lost four of Carlos Rodon's six starts. Now Logan Jernigan and Brad Stone didn't pitch great. The lineup, nothing's really gone according to plan for NC State, has it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, right now, that's a team that I'm worried about a little bit. And, you know, there's some teams that you know, get off to not great starts, and you think, okay, you know, it's fine. And I still think NC State will get it going. But, you know, there's some red flags here right now with this team. I mean, their stars are not playing like stars. I don't, you know, I'm not gonna say it's draftitis, but you see that sometimes with juniors.
No,
you know,
no.
Guys that have performed freshman and sophomore years and have kind of struggled as juniors. And there's a lot of pressure on those guys. They're under the microscope, and you know, they've been very quiet. I mean, you know, Andrew Kisner's been their best hitter, not Trey Turner.
Right.
You know, so, and then Rodon, I mean, I think you have to acknowledge the fact now he's 2-4, and it's not like he's pitched horribly, but. You know, is there? I think maybe NC State needs more leadership out of him, and you know, the reports we've heard on you know, some of the antics on the mound, it rubs people the wrong way. And you know, I know it's always rubbed some people the wrong way, but when it's not going well for that guy, I don't know, John. I mean, I think he needs to do a better job reining in his emotions.
There's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That's all the reports I got this weekend. Were, hey, you know, the stuff was down by the fourth or fifth inning, and that was a problem. You know, his velocity was down, so that's one part that scouts are concerned about. You know, velocity can come and go. He hasn't kicked it into high gear yet. I think everyone keeps on waiting to see high gear. He certainly set the bar high last summer and last season. His first two seasons, he set the bar very high, so the expectations are high. He wants those high expectations. But like you said, the antics, you know, the body language, you know, Brett Austin talked about in the preseason that they talked to him about his body language. You know, when NC State's defense has struggled behind him, he has not responded well. He's pitched fairly well. It's not like there's any red flags in the numbers. But like you said, leadership, I think, is an issue there. I think Trey Turner, you know, hitting home runs in the last two games of that weekend, trying to show some leadership, but you know, offensively, you know, but NC State, you know, against Maryland, facing a sweep, Brad Stone doesn't get out of the first inning, and their only offense is two solo homers. You know, they seem like they've missed the depth of that bullpen. You know, they have two guys that they really like back there, Olzak and Andrew Wick, but it's not the same depth of bullpen they had last year. The starting pitching is supposed to be what kind of carries that team. And, boy, the defense has been a problem all year for NC State. So there's not really a part of their game that you can point to with the team and say this part is functioning at peak capacity. You know, they're fielding 971, but it feels like in league games there's been plays they haven't made, errors that have come at inopportune times. So it's just not a team that's firing anywhere near to all cylinders. And it doesn't, you know, it's the ACC conference schedule is not going to get a whole lot easier for them. As there's, you know, and meanwhile, Maryland, Aaron, really sounds like a team that you're going to have to really bring a polished approach at the plate to beat guys like Jake Stinnett and this weekend rotation that John Sheff has put together there. This is a regional contender, and I think, Aaron, this is going to be a regional team. They've already played four top 25 series. They lost three of them, but they didn't get swept at Florida. They didn't get swept at Florida State, and they didn't get swept at home by North Carolina. And then they've swept NC State, so 6-6 against those teams. They've got Clemson at home. They've got Georgia Tech at home, Notre Dame at home, and their remaining league series on the road are all winnable series at Wake Forest, at Virginia Tech, at BC, at Pittsburgh. I think Maryland's a regional team, Aaron. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, I think you might very well be right. And, you know, the thing that we keep hearing from people who play Maryland, everyone comes away saying, hey, they're pretty good. And it's not just because of the you know, that's a great 1-2 punch in the rotation, I think, with Jake Stinnett and Mike Charwin, the freshman.
How do you pronounce it?
I think it's Showerin.
Okay.
As far as I can, gather.
I didn't want to butcher it. I don't think you did. But I appreciate you making the effort.
But you know, the other thing that I keep hearing about is they got all these exciting power arms in the bullpen that they run at you. I mean, this is a team that has some depth on the mound, and I think, you know, I don't think they're a great offensive team, but they did score some runs this weekend, and you know, against a talented NC State pitching staff. And you know, yeah, I think the schedule opens up okay for them. I mean, it's not like you know, they're this weekend against Clemson. If they lose a fourth series, then well, you know, I mean, honestly, you can lose weekend series, and you know, if you, as long as you don't get swept, it doesn't really kill you from a resume standpoint. We've seen that. I mean, you and I, John, probably place more value in weekend series than the committee does. Unfortunately, I think they should place more value in weekend series. But you know, there's something to be said for not getting swept, and if they can take care of business in some of those other series you talked about, and I'm not completely convinced yet that, you know, they're going to be able to do that from week to week. I mean, you know, if you're losing all the series, most of the series to the top teams, that means you need to win those road series at Wake Forest and Virginia Tech and Pitt. And those are teams that are capable of winning series. So there's no gimmies here. But
no doubt.
But I think, you know, they look like they're probably right in the mix there with, I think, still with Duke for being maybe an eighth team out of the ACC. Now it looks like Georgia Tech will be, you know, one of those top seven teams. I had my doubts about them a few weeks ago, but they've kind of, you know, they've made me feel a bit better about their prospects. So, and Duke actually just got swept this weekend at Pitt. So that just shows you that's a team that I kind of thought was in the mix to maybe be a regional team. And, you know, and Pitt's a team that is not an automatic victory in the ACC. That's for sure.
No doubt. I mean, hey, Pittsburgh, you know, didn't get swept at North Carolina in its first weekend series. They won 42 games last year. They're fully funded now. I tell you, it was an impressive look at Georgia Tech, Aaron, because I think that the average college baseball fan, if you're into college baseball and you listen to this podcast, for example, sponsored by Louisville Slugger, the Baseball America College Podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. First, you notice that my voice is a little hoarse because I did three games this weekend, and boy, two of them were long. Two of them were really long, Aaron, of the North Carolina-Georgia Tech series. And this is not your John Manuel's Georgia Tech team. This is not the 97 to 2004 version of Georgia Tech. This team has a walk-on playing first base hitting four-hole in Thomas Smith. This team is retooled for the BB Corps era, Aaron. This team is airtight defensively on the infield. Their worst defender is Mott Hyde at second base, and he's a senior, and he's starting to figure it out offensively. This guy, I think the notes said that Mott Hyde leads all Division I players in games played and starts among active Division I players. I think it's starts. He has the most games started in Division I of any active player. And this team is built around defense. It's built around infield defense. At third base, Gold and Barzilli. A couple of freshmen, Brandon Gold. And I think it's Evan Barzilli. No, Elliot. Barzilli. Those guys, Aaron, can really pick it. I was extremely impressed with Connor Justice, their freshman shortstop. He could really play shortstop. He turned four double plays in the finale on Saturday night. And that's after playing 24 innings the first two games. 13-inning, 4.5-hour just grind fest in the first game Saturday. And they were fresh enough to turn four DPs. It certainly helps when you win that first one. But I really do wonder long-term about Georgia Tech's pitching depth. I don't think they have the pitching to be an Omaha threat. But
no.
They do have a guy, and they've moved because of the impending rain Sunday. They moved they had a doubleheader Saturday, and with a guy like Matt Grimes coming off Tommy John surgery, they really would have liked to have kept him and Devin Stanton on their regular schedule. They pitched Stanton on Saturday, and only his second start. He really competed well, so they had to move Grimes up a little bit. But he gave them everything they could have possibly asked for with seven innings after they'd been depleted. Pretty intriguing young arm in Zach Ryan, Indiana kid. Matt Gorst, another freshman who's got a pretty nice little breaking ball. He's had two poor outings in terms of walks earlier in the year, and I think he walked three against North Carolina, but he threw his breaking ball for strikes a lot. He was very confident, very good in the middle relief role. Dusty Isaacs is definitely better out of the bullpen than he ever was as a starter. And I'll tell you, Sam Clay, his mama called him Clay, I'm going to call him Clay. Sam Clay, pretty outstanding on Friday night. I believe he may have, if he didn't get the loss, it's because they credited to Dusty Isaacs. He pitched really well, and this is one of the bigger recruits in their sophomore class. And Sam Clay's got a good left-handed arm, good tempo, deception, good size at 6'3", 205. He could be like that next Jed Bradley, the guy who makes a real step forward and becomes a high draft pick next year. The radar gun, I didn't have a radar gun on Sam on Friday, but I was very impressed with him. If they pitch enough on the weekend in the starting role, Clay and Isaacs, and then I feel Zach Ryan will give them a competitive three in the back of that bullpen. So boy, it's just fascinating to see, Aaron, a Georgia Tech team that really, outside of Grimes, does not have a big time draft prospect anywhere on the roster. It's a very different team from the last 3 years with Daniel Palka in the middle of the lineup, or last year's just veteran power lineup with Palka, Evans, Brandon Thomas. I know he had the injuries last year, but Kyle Wren. They had that same lineup basically for 3 years. Completely different team this year, and it's much more of a grinded out mentality there.
That's a neat report, and I'm glad you got a chance to see those guys for three games, because it was a team that had a lot of unknowns heading into the season, and I was ready to bury those guys. I'll tell you, I'll admit it. I was ready to bury those guys after about 4 weeks of the season. I just wasn't a believer.
I was right there with you.
The last two weeks, they've shown me something. Beating winning series against Miami and North Carolina, and now that you've gotten a pretty good look at them, they sound kind of intriguing. And I agree, I'm not sold on their pitching depth. I think that's going to be a problem for them long term. But they sound like they're good enough to be very competitive in the ACC, obviously, and probably get back into a regional.
Well, four ACC teams in the final six spots of our rankings: Clemson, Georgia Tech, UNC, NC State, with Auburn and Tennessee sandwiched in between at 21-22, so some power conference foo there. Aaron, in the Pac-12, we almost brought in UW. No room at the inn for the Huskies this weekend, but it feels like that's the big news out of the Pac-12 this weekend, is A, Oregon State's biggest test to date in terms of the schedule, and they didn't quite pass it. They lose a series at Arizona State.
No.
Well, Arizona State really, that was like a must-win series for the Sun Devils. Still just 12-10 overall, Aaron, but now they have something that they can kind of hang their hat on, is this series win against the O-State Ballers.
And it was in Corvallis, too, so not an easy place to go and win. Arizona State, they do have some nice veteran pieces in the lineup. I mean, I don't love their lineup, but they've got some guys that grind it out. And they do have a few good arms. I mean, Ryan Kellogg pitched very well in that win on Saturday, as he usually does.
Right.
And I think Ryan Bird he's settled back in where he belongs, the back of the bullpen, and he picked up the saves in both of their wins. So I think moving him has really helped. Arizona State needed this. You're right. I mean, they entered this weekend as about a .500 team, and they lost the series last weekend to Washington, now the Huskies are the team. They've won back-to-back series against Arizona State and Arizona. They're sitting there at 16-5, and they sound pretty good. I mean, I like their three arms in the rotation quite a bit. Three guys that have power arms with you know, especially as a Sunday guy. I mean, you're not gonna find a better Sunday guy than Jeff Brigham. That guy can light it up, light up the gun. You know, so Washington's got some athleticism. They've got some veterans. I like Braden Bishop atop their lineup a lot. He can be a dynamic player. You know, Robert Powell in the middle of their lineup, and you know, they've got some nice pieces in place here. And they were kind of an under the radar team, and you know that. They opened up their new ballpark this weekend, Husky Ballpark, and I got a report from somebody who was there who just was raving about how nice it is, and they needed that. It's long overdue. Yeah. And this is a program now that sure seems like it's headed in the right direction. And, hey, they might be the number four team in the Pac-12. If you believe UCLA is the number three team and the two Oregon teams are the top two, might be UW as the fourth team. Who knows?
Aaron, how about this little tidbit from UW? Their best start in conference play since 2003. That predates Tim Lincecum. That's talk about a ballpark that's overdue. How about a team that's a little overdue? Best start in league play since 2003. And they drew about 4,300 fans for the whole weekend. I would encourage, if you're interested in college baseball, obviously you're listening to this podcast again, they have a nice photo story on their site from opening night, which is just, you know, good for them. I mean, it's good for college baseball that in Seattle, in the you know the biggest city in the Pacific Northwest, you know the state of Oregon's already gone college baseball crazy. Let's see if it can happen in the state of Washington. I mean, it's a great city. It's a great college atmosphere. It's a college environment. You know, fans there are going to go for a winner, and you know, why not? Why not UW? You know, I'm very encouraged that the fans there came out. And they had their biggest crowd on Sunday, Aaron, which is very unusual in the college baseball world. 1,700 yeah. fans on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, Oregon State, UCLA, still feel like those are the top three teams in the league. But good encouraging start for UW. Is there? It doesn't feel like there's a team there that could be a fifth regional team, Aaron, unless USC gets hot, just because all those other teams are 500 or below already, and their overall records, just hard to put together a good RPI when your overall record's that bad.
Yeah, it is going to be a real uphill slog for teams like Arizona and Stanford and Cal. And, you know, Cal, we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, is maybe being the team. We were looking for teams in the Pac-12.
We are.
To emerge. And we thought maybe it was Cal. They were 10-5, and now they're 11-11. So the wheels fell off pretty quickly for those guys. USC this weekend, you know, I think won a big road series up at Stanford. They needed that. As a team we like coming into the year, they had struggled the previous few weeks quite a bit.
That's why I say that they, you know, Stanford has played probably the toughest schedule in the country.
Yes.
And I don't know what it says on the strength of schedule, but just an intended schedule. They've played the most big name, good programs of anybody every weekend. It's Rice, it's Vanderbilt, it's Texas, it's this, it's that. And now USC, and they're at home, and, you know, obviously it's a young pitching staff out at on the farm, always fun to say, but a pretty huge performance by USC, and especially the way they won Sunday, Aaron, to come back 2 in the 8th and 3 in the 10th, 5 scoreless innings out of Kyle Toomey out of the bullpen. It feels like it wasn't just that USC won the series. They won you know, some classic Pac-12 low-scoring games and got some big weekends out of Jeremy Martinez and Toomey and the guys who were supposed to be their guys.
Yeah, and Toomey in particular, I think, you know, such a key guy to get him going. And I think ideally you really would like to have him starting on the weekends. And so maybe he can use this as a springboard here after a very strong performance there.
Yeah, and I think Martinez had the tying home run or a tying two-run hit double in the 8th inning there. So that's a guy, you know, these are the guys that, you know, they don't have a ton of depth. They're USC. They, you know, they have a lot of scholarship money tied up in a few quote-unquote star players. You know, that's a big series win for the Trojans, and if there's going to be a fifth team out of the Pac-12, and maybe Stanford can get hot. You know, they have the RPI for it because they expect their RPI to be pretty high. But that was a big series win, I thought, for the Trojans. Aaron, just touch on a couple other things. I think the most impressive team in conference play in the whole country so far this year has probably been Rice at number 10. And I think if the poll mechanics had allowed it, we would have ranked Rice higher. But at back-to-back series sweeps of Conference USA newcomers FAU and FIU, and in a showdown of Owls this weekend, it was the long-standing Owls that really came through. I mean, this is a team on a 9-game win streak, and that's the way you respond to adversity, I guess, right? I mean, you have your number one starter hurt, and you come out and you sweep those two teams back to back.
Those are two real quality series wins. I mean, two teams that should be in the mix for regionals, and Rice is they've really clicked offensively, and the pitching staff has gelled. Because how about Matt Dittman? That guy hadn't allowed a run yet in 21 innings out of the bullpen. It makes it so much easier to put Zach LeMond on Friday when you've got that guy at the back of the bullpen. And then Chase McDowell, we talked about, I think, last week, is a guy that they were hoping could step into that rotation and give them some stability on Sundays, and he did. He pitched 7 strong innings this weekend. So, I think Rice, to me, looks like a pretty balanced team. And, it's funny because just 3 weeks ago, probably on this very podcast, we were talking about how we were worried about Rice after losing Jordan Stevens. Right. And now I feel great about Rice, even without Stevens. I just feel like it's hard to find teams that are balanced. And they have pretty good balance here. And I think they're pretty darn good.
Succinctly and well said, Aaron. I forgot to read this earlier. We've hit this topic, but I do want to read our podcast question from podcast@baseballamerica.com from Joe LeCates. More of a draft question than a strictly college related. He's excited about Jake Stinnett, a rare senior draft prospect. Seemed like a 5th to 10th round guy with some good velo and a good frame. Maybe be a nice low leverage, inexpensive pick for a team looking to spend money elsewhere. After seeing his 8-inning, 14-strikeout performance on Friday with good command of 3 pitches and the nice velo and besting NC State and Carlos Rodon, I admit I'm a believer. Is this someone who could possibly be playing himself up into the first few rounds of the draft? And also, big kudos to Aaron for saying in an earlier podcast, so that would give Maryland a Friday starter who could actually hang with the best of the aces in the ACC. Aaron, I had a report of Sinet up to 96 Friday, and I had one scout just tell me that if you didn't know the track record and you didn't know the history that you and you just saw, again, like, I mean, the only way to say it in the way that the scout said it is, if you saw Rodon's act on Friday, and scouts are very down on that body language, like you said, and you just saw Stinnett just be business, sound to quote Eddie Murphy from Boomerang, strictly business, and just go in there and just take care of his business, to use the old Pat Murphy phrase, palm down, not looking for any handout. He's pitching his way into the first couple of rounds of the draft is what it sounds like, Aaron. And the fact that he's a senior and you can save some money there, he might be a senior first-round pick. I don't think that's crazy to say, is it?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's 93-96 every time out, and it's heavy downhill. And, when
he
finishes...
Is that heavy? Is there something wrong with the feature with the Earth's gravitational pull?
Automatic +2, well
Thank
played.
You.
and when he really finishes that breaking ball, it can really be a hammer. I mean, he can snap off some very good ones. So he's got the size, he's got the durability, he's got the athleticism, former position player, and still a fairly fresh arm. And John, I think he could be a first round pick, and this would be a guy probably for us to write about here in Draft Tracker pretty soon because he's got some helium, and I think he's very intriguing.
I agree, Aaron. That's as good a way as any to end the podcast. Great stuff from you. And so, where's your next stop on the itinerary, Rye?
I'll be in Stillwater tomorrow night for a midweek game.
Isn't that the name of the band in Almost Famous?
Yeah, there you go. Stillwater Runs Deep, I think, was the headline for.
That's it.
And then Wednesday I'll be in Manhattan for Kansas State in Nebraska, and then I'll see Nebraska again on Friday against UNLV, and I think I'll finish the trip in Wichita to see the Cal State Fullerton Titans against the Shockers.
I love that you're getting to see Fullerton. Are you going to be is Phil Bickford going to be pitching on Sunday, or he's moved up to Saturday by now, has he not?
He has been pitching on Saturday, although I think Garza is supposed to be back next week, so we'll see how they structure the rotation. So I might just try to catch both of the last two games of that series and see if I can see both those guys.
That'll be fun.